Jerry Douglas, I think, is one of those legends. He's my guest in the second hour. Jerry's been a frequent contributor to Unreal Bluegrass. The occasion this time was the announcement that Jerry's going to be the artist in residence at the Gray Fox Bluegrass Festival in 2020. We talk about a lot of things, a lot of the music before, even this jazz band with the album What If. But we talk specifically about artist in residence, Jerry. What does that mean to you? He had some very specific ideas. I'm always delighted to have Jerry as a guest. He always has great things to discuss, great ideas. Thanks so much for tuning in to Unreal Bluegrass.
There, we just heard from the Live Earls of Leicester, Big Black Train. I'm sitting here with Jerry Douglas, who has been a contributor to Unreal Bluegrass several times.
It's nice to be back, though.
It's always nice to be back.
You. Nice. Thanks for having me.
Well, and I know you're traveling right now with the Earls of Leicester. We're in a venue right now where you'll put on another show and move on down the line.
Yeah.
I always like to talk to you. It's always fun. We don't have your dogs here to chase balls around.
I forgot about that.
That was good.
That's pretty normal.
Yeah. But this is what kind of piqued my curiosity. Is you were announced a week or so ago that you were going to be the artist in residence at Gray Fox Bluegrass Festival.
Yes, I've known about it for a couple of months. I thought about that, and I took the job with some trepidation because I talked to Billy Strings, and he told me, he said, I played with the oldest guys there, and I played with the youngest guys there. And I said, well, I probably do that every year there anyway, so this won't be too bad. And he said, they take care of you. They make sure you can get from place to place, any place you want to go. And then I started having weird dreams about killer clowns.
I can get everything. I can get the trepidation. Although every time I've seen you there, which has been a lot, you've always take your dobro and you go on stage with whoever's there. But now people expect you to be the artist in residence. But the clowns, I don't get at all.
Well, what
I don't
does
need
that,
to get into that.
What does that really mean?
I mean,
artist in residence is being like...
That's what I'm asking you.
I think I'm going to play different shows in different formats while I'm there. I'll probably do a workshop. I'll do a solo show. I'll do a show with my band. I'll play with whoever's there, just like I always do. So it's not a big stretch for me to think about doing that at Gray Fox, because that's always been one of my favorite festivals. I love Mary Dow, Claire, all the people that are there. I've known for 25 years, and so we're kind of family. So it's just something a little extra.
It is like a family up there. I've been doing the show based out of there in different ways. I used to broadcast from there, and I just go up now and I kind of wander around.
Mm-hmm.
And I find people like you, whoever I can find. But the nature of the organization from the top down, it's we're going to make this work. We're going to keep people happy, whether it's an artist or whether it's someone sitting on a lawn chair somewhere. It's Gray Fox is an amazing experience.
And it's been a weather event in many occasions. I was there the first time they had this festival. It was called the Berkshire Mountains Festival,
right.
And there was a lady named Nancy Talbot put the festival on. Of course, she didn't have any money or anything. I don't know if we got paid or not, any of that kind of stuff. Can't remember. There was a fellow got hit by lightning during the festival. They gave him a lifetime pass.
I guess so. As long as he stayed over there in a different spot.
Yeah, been over there. Well, I think somebody. Yeah, isn't that right? If you've been hit once, you're likely to be hit again.
Right.
There's some park ranger that's been hit like 12 times.
I saw that.
He's a little nervous.
Yeah, he's a little nervous.
Yeah.
Well, the weather's always been because you don't realize it for me driving up there that you're rising slowly.
Mm-hmm.
I drive from Cincinnati here, where we are now.
Yeah.
Slowly go up and up and up, and you are in the mountains, so the weather can change quickly. The last time I saw you there, although I've seen you there every time, but I think it was on the side of the stage. It might have been when you had just recorded What If, that album, and you had that band there.
Mm-hmm.
And here's Jerry Douglas. You look like the artist in residence. You were all nice and clean, and I was covered in mud. I was living down in that water. Remember, it was like 3 or 4. Remember that one?
Yeah, it's bad.
So I'm covered in mud, and I'm talking to you, and you're dressed like, I'm going to get my jazz band. I'm going to go out there and play some killer music. And I thought, this guy looks like an artist in residence. I look like somebody who just stumbled across the line through the creeks.
Oh, no, well, no, I'm in a golf cart a lot. I'm not walking through a lot of mud.
Right,
you know,
right.
I would if I needed to. I'm not a bucket. But, that festival, there have been years when at the other farm.
Which I had no experience with. This is the current one's on what I know.
That was really a mud hole. It could become a mud hole. Yeah. But now the new one is so civilized. I mean, all the camping is on flat ground. It used to be on the side of a hill. You could roll out of your tent in the middle of the night and wake up in somebody else's tent the next morning.
It's laid out.
By mistake,
yeah. Or on purpose, but you could at least say. Yeah.
You could at least say it was by mistake.
No, this hill is dangerous up here.
There's some neat aerial photographs. Every once in a while they pop up. Someone, I don't know who they took them, some drone or something. But when you see it from above, it's laid out like a city.
It is. And they have streets named after the entertainers.
They have streets. They have little areas. They have their water supply, which I thought this was genius. They have water that goes back to the camping areas. You don't have to be an artist in residence to know this or comment on it, but the pressure, the water pressure they get is from those big tanks that they have up on the top of the hill. They just continually fill those up, and the water pressure comes to all the little faucets out throughout the camp.
Oh, that's a lot of down pressure from the top of that hill.
Oh,
that must be at least 150-foot drop.
Yeah, every year they tweak it. Every year they make it better, I think. Every year they make it better.
I
do remember when you had the What If, that record blew my mind. You had one of the best jazz bands I've ever seen, although I didn't really know those players that were with you.
No, they were new to the whole genre. You know, they weren't bluegrass musicians.
No,
I had cut What If. You know, I'd gotten that far out on the edge of things. That I just kept going and decided to use horns instead of what I'd always used, mandolins or fiddles or something, you know, to make up a chorus of what I was writing were really horn lines in my songs all along.
Yeah.
But never really, so I went ahead and did it, you know, and cut it with the band. And oh, wow, we had a whole year that was so much fun to get that, you know, not out of my system, but to see what it feels like to play with a band like that. It's such a huge sound behind you, you know, drums and bass and the horn section behind you. It's a major thing to deal with. Plus having this crazy electric guitar player with me, too.
He was
amazing. Mike Steele.
Oh, man.
Total.
He was great. That was the one show live that I get stand-ups on stage. I don't know why, but I get to stand behind that curtain.
Uh-huh.
That's the one that I wanted, even though I was covered in mud. I wanted to make sure I saw that. That was the one that I absolutely had. Because we had talked about it before as it was coming out. And then you said you were going to bring that band up there. And that's one that I just had to see.
Well, I've done every few whiz. I've done the solo show there. I've played there with the Earls. I played there with, I don't know who the first band I played there with was. But I played there with Alison Krauss. I played there with the Whites, you know.
Wow.
That far back with Mary.
Yeah.
Doubt. Yeah. And to come there, I just thought, you know, I need to show them everything that I do. I mean, they're really nice to me, and I just want to show them what I'm up to. And they were so quiet at first because they were just kind of like still taking it in, going, I don't really know what I'm seeing, you know, or what is this I'm hearing. But at the end of it, they just went nuts. It was great. I mean, it was a bigger success than I could have hoped for. But to play that music in front of those people who don't know what to expect from me.
They don't, but if you're talking about the What If, that band, when you took them up there, which I call them the What If band because I don't remember all their names, but it was a later in the evening show, and that audience, to me, from what I've seen, is pretty hip.
Yeah.
And if you're good,
they're
on it.
Yeah.
And they recognized right away that you were doing something special that night, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
But I've watched that audience react to new, let's say, new or different things that maybe you wouldn't expect. But that whole Grey Fox audience, to me, is so many of them from around in the Northeast area.
It's a very highly educated audience.
I think so.
No
knock on anybody else, but I think these people have a wide experience.
If you're drawn from New York City and you know,
the Northeast in general.
And Woodstock and that kind of area where a lot of those people have gone, you know, a lot of PhDs up there.
Yeah.
You know? But, the folks are are generally very receptive to whatever I do there, and that's really nice. But I thought I don't know if they're gonna like this, but they did. So everything's good.
They did. Right now you're touring with the Earls of Leicester. I know you do a lot of things on the side, and you're bringing the Earls through right now. Is there a new album on the way for the Earls of Leicester that you know
of?
We
don't have one planned right now, but I'm sure there is one down the road, and we'll just have to see what that is, you know, if we change up what we do.
Yeah.
You know, if we're going to, you know, we're constantly struggling with, okay, do we keep doing just straight up Flatten Scruggs, or I know that Camp, I know you have a song that would work for this, you know.
Yeah.
So there's that. That little lure out there all the time. But, you know, I divide my year up into sections for the other band and for solo stuff and just for other, you know, all kinds of things that just thrown that come my way. And I've been working on a duets record now since the Earls started. That was what I was originally signed to do with Drowning, was this duets record.
Really?
And then the Earls thing happened, and the Mike Aldridge and Rob Ike's record I had ready to go at the same time, so I asked if I could put these two things, go right to these two things, and they said yes. I said, I think the Earls record will just be a one-off, you know, we'll just do one thing, and then that'll be good enough, we'll be done.
And then award season came around.
Yeah, and so it's just kind of grown. It's got a life of its own. It just kept going. We couldn't stop it. So we're still doing it, and we made a pact years ago that we would do it as long as we still felt like we were 6 years old while we were playing it. You know, like really excited about it. And if we weren't, then that was good enough. You know, we were re-educating.
Exactly.
We were doing that in the first place.
Right.
Bringing them back into
the first time you were on the show when the Earls first album came out, I lined up everything that you had from Flatten Scruggs that you had done with the Earls and listened to them all in the same sequence. And you're trying to recreate that sound.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing from that time period sounds like what you do today, no matter what you do.
Technology's different.
Yeah, it just
people
has a different
are different,
feel. Yeah.
You know, and I think of us as Flatten Scruggs the next day.
After
they got out of the studio, and they went to the hotel and they sat around talking about,
okay,
what would we have done different?
What would we have
done?
Okay.
They're just a little bit something, you know, and that's kind of what this band sounds like to me, you know. But the first time I heard the first song that we kicked off together and played all the way through, I just got cold shivers because it was so much like the real thing. It was as close as I'll ever get.
And when you get the red ties.
Yeah,
you're
when
right
you go
there.
Start going.
Then you know it's real. When you put
ties and coats, we're a little different. I mean, Flatten Scruggs wore the coats, and the other guys wore white shirts and ties.
Okay.
But you know, we haven't decided who exactly Flatten Scruggs really are in this band. So we all sort of
dress the part. I mentioned the What If album, and I want to have the opportunity for the listeners. I'm talking to Jerry Douglas. Thank you, Jerry. I want to put in. I want them to hear What If, the title cut from that album that you did that we talked about at length.
Mm-hmm.
And is there anything you want to say about the tune before we go to it? Then we're going to come back and we'll chat for just a minute.
It's a real departure from the Earls of Leicester.
Yeah.
We'll say that. It's on the other end of the spectrum of kind of what I do. It's not the loud electric version, but it's this tune. I took it to, I was going to do the radio show with Chris Thiele, and I played him that song, and he said, wow, this is Debussy. And I said, it is? Did I rip it off? He said, no. It sounds like a Debussy piece. And I said, well,
because he's probably still got a family in an estate. They'll find you. But no, they didn't.
But it isn't. It's something that I wrote out of, you know, just from exercises that I was playing along doing, and then it became this song. And it's got a lot of moving parts and all the horns and all this kind of stuff. It's got the full Jerry Douglas Band What If. It is What If.
We're going to listen to that, and I'll be right back. That was What If. Jerry, thanks for introducing it. I know you're getting ready for a sound check here. I appreciate your time. you have so many projects going on. I think you've got something in the works right now that you told me you were kind of a retrospective thing.
Well, I have a...
Or not so much that, but go back and recreate it. You explain it better than I can.
I'm doing a... what is this kind of record? Well, I've recorded for Rounder for many years, and Rounder is about to have a big birthday, a 50th birthday. And I wasn't on the first Rounder record, okay? I'm not that old. But I went back. They had me go back and count up and find all the artists that I'd recorded with on Rounder, and it came out to 94 artists.
I would have guessed 1,000.
oh, man. I'd be 700 years old. But So I have to get it down to 30. So I went in and listened. There's so much material in there and so many things that I had forgotten about that I hadn't heard since I recorded. But some things did stick out to me that I had played on or produced or had some hand in, you know, like the Crow record, the 044, that one, all these Tony Rice records, you know, all the Allison stuff was on Rounder.
How old were you when 044?
I was 19.
I was going to say.
18 or 19.
That was, of course, you know, I was looking to play banjo then, and that was, everybody had to have it right away. You could get the original cover. That was even sweeter.
It is the new cover.
Right? Oh,
yeah, yeah, yeah. They brought it out. They decided it was time that they could really show people that cover. But it's not really that strange, you know. It got by everybody. Quality control.
Yeah,
until it was out. There were 1,000.
What I remember
5,
specifically too about that album, which is now is it should be and is so revered as if you want to hear blue. But when it came out, it was like, well, that's too far. And you think about
really?
It.
Really?
Yeah. It was so different from what people were hearing up to that point that it was kind of like, well, I don't know. But, you know, now it's like, that's the greatest. At the time, it wasn't received that way. Maybe it was just because there were people who didn't want any changes to occur. And maybe they wanted J.D. to do the Kentucky Mountain Boys. I don't know. But I remember the reaction. And it's kind of not really worked out that way. It's one of the most famous.
Well, it had material on it that was different than what everybody else was doing.
That's
on their records. I mean, there were Gordon Lightfoot tunes. Which became kind of Tony's norm after that.
Yeah.
You know, he did everything that Gordon Lightfoot ever recorded.
And I will say this: he sang it better.
He sang great.
I love Gordon Lightfoot, but I thought Tony's vocals at that time. Gordon probably would have said
Gordon, they met and Gordon knew about Tony doing all these songs and he really appreciated him selling all these records.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
All that mailbox money he was making.
Mailbox
coming from the States. But but yeah, they did meet and they are so alike, even in appearance, you know. That record, we were doing things, you know, Crow was really just like, I won't say he peaked, you know, in his playing or anything like that, because I don't think that's true. I think he played better even after that, but he's just played great his whole life.
He was at an abnormal level and a really high level.
Yeah,
he could have peaked later, but
he had Tony Rice and he had Ricky Skaggs, and they asked me to come in and play on like 2 cuts, and I ended up playing on 8. Or 9 songs, and after that, then I joined the band.
Yeah,
but there were some great players, and you know, just kind of turned the whole music on its head.
That's what it was. It was the selection of tunes and the way being played, and it just was. People caught up to it quickly, but I remember when it hit the record stores, and you know, but I had to have it because of JD, and I knew who you were, but I was
kind of like that 10,000 hours thing, you know, like the Malcolm Gladwell thing, where everybody on that record had already put in
10,000, so this was 10,005.
Yeah,
you know,
whatever it takes, you know, 220, 221. But I think it was just a room full of great musicians, and it translated. And everybody heard it. And I remember playing Berryville, Virginia at the festival. That was the biggest bluegrass festival we would play. And I had been going to that festival since I was a kid. So I'd seen the original Country Gentleman there. I'd seen Bill Monroe and Don Reno and Carter. I didn't see Carter Stanley, but I saw her Alf, you know, right after. Anything since 68 I had seen there. And but it was just like we were kind of taken the same way as, like, I suppose I felt when I saw The Country Gentleman for the first time there at Fairville. It just blew the top off the place.
Yeah.
And I also saw J.D. come to Berryville there with Doyle and Larry and Bobby Sloan. And they tore the place up. It was like, gee whiz, these giants have just landed. You know, they're going to play and our hair is all going to blow off.
Yeah.
It was a magical moment to be on stage and playing, you know, as a kid had seen
sure.
it happen.
Yeah, sure.
But be standing up there doing this, you know, and trying to figure that out. You never do.
Do you still have those moments where when you're kind of looking down on yourself and of all the stuff you've done, you're looking down and you're thinking, still have that question in your mind, like, how did I get here?
That's yeah, the better sure one. Sure you yeah. do. Sure I do. I mean, I've had shows where I thought, you know, it is kind of an out-of-body experience where you're kind of looking down. You can't seem to do anything wrong.
Yeah.
And
you know it. At the time you know it.
Yeah. At the time you know it. And it's a doesn't happen very often.
Yeah.
I mean, hardly ever. But just those times when that does happen, it's hard to explain. It's hard to explain how
that
feels.
It's like you're an open channel. It's like you're an open channel.
But you're a part of a band too. Yeah. You're part of, you know, everybody else on stage is doing the same thing. They're just hitting it. It's all hitting on all the cylinders. You know.
Can you tell that when the other ones are going through the same experience on stage?
Yes.
Yeah.
Cool? You can hear it, and it makes you play even better.
Wow.
You know? But you have to have open ears on stage. That's the point. That's the thing. The only way you're going to know that is if you're listening, and if you can't hear them, you're playing too loud. You know.
Yeah.
And that's the rule in this band, in the Earls, is when the camp's singing, there's the banjo, which is always okay to be heard, and the rest of the band is a moving big thing. But there's one backup player who's reacting to the voice. And not two, we don't play on top of each other. There's focus at all times. So that's a flattened Scruggs rule, and that's something we went to school on when we were kids listening to those records. We noticed those guys didn't do that, and we don't do that.
Listen, I could talk to you for days, but I know you have a sound check coming up. But just like we went to the What If tune and we started it off with Big Black Train from the Earls of Leicester, of these thousands of people that you've played with and all these songs that you've done, is there a song as we close out and I let you get back to work that you'd like for the listening audience of Unreal Bluegrass to hear? I don't care what it is. I probably got it. I think we talked about Pearly May. We talked about a lot of
Pearly May. We talked about it. I really love Pearly May from Slide Rule back a long time ago. But just the other day when I was working on this, you know, pulling up songs for this record that I was talking about for the 50th anniversary around it, there's a song called Darcy Farrow that was on the Tony Rice thing, and I don't remember if it's with Chris Hillman and Herb Peterson or if it's on one of Tony's records just solo, but it's definitely Tony, and I think Mark Schatz is playing bass, and you know, those are two guys that I've worked with so much, but it just sounded magical to me.
Well,
thanks for having me.
I'll say goodbye. You will play Darcy Farrow, and I'll see you down the road, and I'll see you at Grey Fox as your artist thing all over the place.
What's left of me.
All right, man. Thanks a lot.
All right.